All right, so 1 Timothy chapter 1, I'm going to start reading in verse 3. As I urged you when I was going to Macedonia, remain at Ephesus so that you may charge certain persons not to teach any different doctrine, nor to devote themselves to myths and endless genealogies, which promote speculations rather than stewardship from God that is by faith. Then the aim of our charge is love that issues from a pure heart and a good conscience and a sincere faith. Then I want you to jump down to, I'm having trouble with my eyes today, so this may be exciting. There we go. Jump down to You would think my electronic Bible would be the same as this one. I have contacts in. That's actually the problem. If I have them out, I'll be able to see this great. But it'll be terrifying for Patty when we drive home. So we don't want that. All right. Verse 18. Sorry about that. This charge I entrust to you, Timothy, my child, in accordance with the prophecies previously made about you, that by them you may wage good warfare, holding faith and a good conscience. So if you saw up above, it talked about from a pure heart, good faith and good conscience. And here he's telling them wage warfare. And so when we, up above, it talked about the good deposit, the stewardship that we have from God. A lot of 1 Timothy is about stewardship. It's about how God's church, what it's supposed to look like. And Timothy is put in place to help bring things in line. And Paul is telling Timothy how he might run that church, being a good steward of the good deposit that God has made. And so as we look at stewardship here, he calls it warfare. And why would he call that warfare? How is stewardship warfare? Exactly. Because the very things that God brings about are continually tests for obedience, for submission to Him, for submission to His Word. Will we be obedient to the things that He's called us to do? And so today we're going to go through two sections, hopefully. And as we look at that, I want you to keep that in mind, that this is warfare. And when you think about warfare, what are soldiers, this might not be a great example, are soldiers distracted during war? Now, war can have different parts to it, but I'm talking about a battle. As there's a battle going on, do they get distracted?
Not if they're going to win.
Great answer. That's exactly right. You take all the frivolous things and you put them to the side, and you focus on the things that have to be done, right? We all know that in the military, there's discipline, and there needs to be discipline because of what they're trying to accomplish is going to be under great stress, right? All the training they go through, they have people that die in training. It's not uncommon for someone to die during training because they need to bring that same kind of environment that they have to learn in the midst of that. God brings us through those same things with stewardship, with the things that He's given us, right? We talked, and I think in the first week, we talked about that we have an inheritance from God that is beyond anything that the world has, right? Everything belongs to God. And so we lack nothing. And yet we're given those things so that we may be obedient to what He's called us to do, that we could be good stewards of what He's given us. So This is going to be the beginning. We looked at some last week. I'll still read through some of it because some people weren't here. I think we went through a few slides last week, and then we're going to continue on. And so we're starting biblically driven spending plans. That's what will be starting the first module this week. And again, we have our friend Dave Ramsey. I'll just read through this again. Sorry for you that were here last week. Popular Christian radio host Dave Ramsey has released a brand new magic 8-ball that always answers in the negative when you ask it if you should buy something. Ask the Ramsey 8 ball if you should buy the new golf club set, give it a shake, and it will respond, "Are you nuts?" Ask it if you can open up a credit card just for the reward points, and it'll show you a drawing of Ramsey glaring at you disapprovingly. People kept calling into my radio show asking stupid questions about what they should buy, Ramsey said in a product announcement video. Now they can just ask the Magic 8 ball instead of clogging up my phone lines. I win, you win, we all win. Now we can go spend more time living like no one else. Other answers included, sure, you can buy it if you don't want to have any money to live on in retirement. And no, did I stutter? And lastly, why? Why are you the way that you are? Ramsey is selling the 8 ball for $99. He said it's okay to make this one purchase, though, since it'll save you from a bunch of other unnecessary purchases. Yeah, I like that. All right, we're going to look at Deuteronomy 8:18. And we covered this last week, but we're just going to touch on it again. Who can read that for us?
Thank you.
But you shall remember the Lord your God, for it is he who is giving you power to make wealth, that he may confirm this covenant which he swore to your fathers as it is this day. It shall come about, if you ever forget the Lord your God and go after other gods, and serve them and worship them, I testify against you today that you shall surely perish. Like the nations that the Lord makes to perish before you, so you shall perish because you would not listen to the voice of the Lord your God.
Thank you. So what was God's purpose in this passage here as we're looking at this? What does God call them to do?
He calls them to remember that when they make wealth, it's only by his power.
Exactly. That they wouldn't forget that he did it. Do we ever run into trouble with that? Do you guys ever run into trouble with that? I do. I know. Right? When all of a sudden you're doing something and you're accomplishing something and you're thinking, wow, I'm actually good at this. Right? It's funny, I don't know if I said this last week, but in SI, did I tell you guys that last time? Yeah, okay, yeah. Because it starts where you're terrified because you have to give a presentation of some kind, and it's miserable. That's right, Brian agreed with me there. It's miserable, and then you give it, and after it's over, you were like, wow, I can do that again, until the next time comes up and you're supposed to do it, and then you're terrified again. That's when you know your need, right? And God wants them to know their need, and I like this section here in the commentary. It says, in that desert experience, the Lord had brought water out of the hard rock. In Canaan, they would find streams and pools. In that desert, the Lord gave them manna. In Canaan, bread would not be scarce. In their prosperity, they might claim that their hands produced wealth, not remembering that the Lord their God gave them the ability to produce wealth in confirmation of his covenant. And so the principle there, God provides all wealth and prosperity. Every spending planning decision is a spiritual one. And I just ask you to consider that. Do we really think about that? That all of our spending decisions are spiritual ones. That it's what is the drive of how we spend our time, talent, and treasure? Proverbs 3:9-10. Who will look at that for us? Read that.
Thank you.
Honor the Lord from your wealth. First of your produce, so your barns will be filled with plenty, and your vats will overflow with new wine.
Thank you.
And so that principle is first, honor the Lord with your wealth. And it's, if we keep in mind our purpose of what we're seeking to do, that it's about the kingdom, then we will honor the Lord first, right? The first priority in spending is a sacrifice in recognition that all that God has provided. Woo. All right, I got to make that bigger. Then Proverbs 13:22.
I'll read that. Thank you.
to his children's children, but the sinner's wealth is laid up for the righteous.
And so here we have the principle of leaving an inheritance for those that are after us. And the commentary says, divine justice determines the final disposition of one's inheritance. In Israel, the idea of bequeathing inheritance was a sign of God's blessing, blessing extended to the righteous and not to sinners. And the principle here is leaving inheritance is a sign of God's blessing. And then Proverbs 21:17, who would read that? Thank you.
He who loves pleasure will become a poor man. He who loves wine and oil will not become rich.
Thank you. And so it's interesting, if we read a little bit further, he actually talks about the righteous have wine and oil in their house right after that, after he said that he that loves pleasure. But what's the difference between those two, right? He that loves pleasure, as opposed to the wise man who has that same wine and oil in his house.
An overuse of it, love for it so much that you can't live without it.
Mm-hmm. It's the thing that you pursue. Wine and oil are a blessing that's received. It's not the thing that's pursued. And so pleasure, is pleasure wrong? No. It's not wrong. But if we love pleasure and that's what we pursue, that's sinful. That's not what we're to pursue, right? Pleasure is a blessing that we receive from God. And so here, living a life of self-indulgent pleasure leads to poverty. The love portrayed here must be excessive or uncontrolled because it brings on poverty. And then the commentator goes on to say that perhaps other things are not being paid attention to, that the person is pursuing pleasure first. It's one of the things in which the contentment helps us in that exact area, is being content with what you have. Often, I probably said this before too, but contentment, we often think we have to add things to be content, right? If you ask many people, what's it going to take to be content? They're going to say, if I just had this, if I just had that, whatever it may be, maybe health, right? Maybe more time. Maybe our children are this way or that way. But that's not what godly contentment is. Godly contentment is finding satisfaction in the very things that God has provided to us, including the things that are difficult. And so the principle here is living a life of uncontrolled self-indulgent pleasure leads to poverty. And then Proverbs 21:20. Who would read that?
Okay.
There is a precious treasure and oil in the dwelling of the wise, but a foolish man swallows it up.
So what's that speaking of there? What's happening in that passage?
The rich have, but the poor, when they might have, they just consume it. While the wise have, the unwise would just consume it.
The wise what? I'm sorry.
The wise have. Mm-hmm. They tend to accumulate, mm-hmm, and just have the stuff on hand. The poor can't have it on hand because they just consume it.
Hmm. Very good.
You're saying poor instead of unwise.
The unwise become poor in these
right.
passages, yeah?
That's the issue. There's a correlation established between the two, so I keep swapping out the fools and getting them mixed up.
And so here, it's consuming it. This is the contrast, as he said, between the wise person and the fool. And the wise prepare for the future, and they have foresight in how to be frugal with the things that God has given them, to spend them wisely. But the fool devours it. In other words, the wise gain wealth, but the fools squander it, selfishly consuming the blessings of God. And that's often what happens. Somebody who's pursuing pleasure is that the things that they receive, they're consuming quickly and they just want more, right? Have you ever had Krispy Kreme donuts? Same principle, I think. All right. And so the principle Appropriate frugality requires preparation for the future, which often limits and controls spending in the present. And it's not just preparation for the future. Some of that frugality is also related to what resources I have, time, talent, treasure, what am I dedicating to each of these different circumstances. Some of that frugality has to do with that I'm putting the kingdom first, and so I'm going to spend less on myself. I'm not going to have those pleasures myself because I'm going to save those things to give to the kingdom work, right? To benefit others, to help the needy. And so some of that frugality is frugality is always self-imposed, but some of it is because it's I want to spend these resources here on God's kingdom as opposed to in my own pleasures or things for my biological family. All right, Ecclesiastes 5:10. Who would read that?
He who loves money will not be satisfied with money, nor he who loves abundance with his income. This too is vanity.
Can you read it again, Mark? I'm sorry.
He who loves money will not be satisfied with money, nor he who loves abundance with its income. This too is vanity.
And so that's that exact principle that I was just talking about, is always desiring more. Even when you have it, you want more of it. Struggle for power comes for the desire for more and more, and here it says money. These insatiable desires also bring frustration. Not money itself, but a love of money is the root of all kinds of evil, 1 Timothy 6:10.
So it sounds like you're saying that, or one of the things we might be drawing from this, is that really rich people are not always wise, and really poor people are not always unwise. Because the really poor, they may have been poor because not of their unwise decisions, but for other reasons.
Yes.
And the wise, they may have a lot, but they love it so much that they're not spending it in a way.
Mm-hmm. You did it this time. You said I'm the wise, not I'm the rich.
Yes. So last week we talked about that our financial circumstance, when we're talking just about rich and poor financially, our financial circumstance is determined by the Lord. We're to be stewards wherever the Lord has us. So what you just said is exactly right. There's temptations on different ends of that. For the rich, right, that's one of the things I was going to read. Rockefeller, richest man in the world at the start of the 20th century, they asked him, so how much is enough? Because he kept getting more and more and more. You guys know his answer?
One more dollar,
right? And that's a temptation for the rich. There's a temptation for the poor that has to do with spiritual disciplines. It's interesting because you can take a vow of poverty and say, I have no money, right? And that, because I'm giving everything to the Lord, I don't need anything for myself. So you can be putting all that stuff off. So there's two temptations that happen in that. That could be prideful because you're doing that thing. I'm doing this, and I'm doing this in my own strength. And you can get pride in the very fact that you're giving away everything. Okay. There's a second one that's pretty interesting to me, is that those that are poor often don't understand that if they had lots of money, that wouldn't make them happy. They don't know that. And I'm talking about third world countries, not in America, but in third world countries, they have a dream that if I only had that, if I had what they have, then everything would be okay. And they won't. And they, one second, and they're not going to grasp that. They're never going to attain to that. And so that hope always stays out there, and their hope's placed in the wrong place, and that's sinful. Yes.
When I was a sophomore in high school, we took a trip to the Dominican Republic. Mm-hmm. And that was, for me, the thing that impacted me the most was seeing these people that lived, you know, with dirt huts, mm-hmm. and just how giving they were and how joyful they were. Mm-hmm. And here we come, you know, with all these things and thinking we're going to bless them with clothes. But honestly, they were fine with the same clothes every week. They knew the Lord. They were so just giving. And one family even gave us a coconut, which was to them. You know, it was a surprise thing. It was like they gave it to our group to eat. Mm-hmm. And I just remember thinking, wow, like we have it so backwards.
Yeah.
Just because we have so much.
Yeah.
And we think even as a country, we're like
yeah.
so rich. And but we're, because of our riches, we're so spiritually impoverished.
Mm-hmm. I had a very similar experience in Ecuador. We did a short-term mission trip there, and actually walked away seeing how blessed they were. And the reason that I knew that they were blessed is because they had nothing. They knew they needed God. They were desperate. And it was the same thing. The houses, this one house in particular, I remember the grandmother and the grandfather, dirt floor, chickens running through it and everything, and grandmother and grandfather, like when you walk in the door, they're right there in their beds. They can't move. And they want us to come in, and they're trying to just minister to us as we're there. And the joy that it was for them to do that. And the interesting part is that in this little village, they actually had a Catholic church that was this beautiful building. I mean, stucco and just really beautiful building, extremely poor people. And it had a big iron gate around it. And there was nobody there the whole time we were there. I mean, this in the middle of their little village was this just amazing building, and there was nobody there the whole time doing anything. And we were there trying to help build a new church for them. And every day we left, the water that we used for the masonry, you know, I mean, we were putting cement in. We would leave and they would be running to get that water. And it's just, they've lived in very difficult circumstances. And yet, they knew they needed God very quickly. I mean, they responded really well when you talk to them about God. They were looking for hope. America doesn't look for hope. What do we need, right? There's very little that we are self-sufficient. It's so easy for us to get lost in that. So getting back to what you said, absolutely. There's sin on both ends of this. And God determines those that have riches and those that don't. And so when we stop and consider in Psalm 16, it says in verse 5, it says, "The lines have fallen for me in pleasant places. Indeed, I have a beautiful inheritance." We can take that and apply that, and it doesn't matter what it is that we have. Yes, sir.
So I guess then I think everybody might feel the tension. I'll just put it out there that financial blessings are clearly a blessing from the Lord as well. So what I think you're talking about is finding a way to use your money wisely, to save, to do the thing. Because that's kind of, I mean, because the danger of that is falling into kind of socialistic ways of looking at money, like all wealth is bad. And I know nobody's saying that, mm-hmm. but there can be a danger in looking at it and go, well, they're happy in their poverty, mm-hmm. in a sense. And that's the problem in America. And one of the problems with wealth is keeping your eyes on God. Mm-hmm. It is, I think, sometimes we look at America like we almost can envy somebody being poor, but really God placed us here to live in a wealthy economy and to be a blessing mm-hmm. in the midst of it, and to do things, to live rightly. And that's why we always have to wrestle to save well, to, not that I'm doing that all that well. I mean, that's one mm-hmm. thing is to try to, mm-hmm. try to learn to do things
right.
better, to be giving
right.
to these. But anyway, there's a tension there. I don't know that I'm expressing that well.
Yeah.
It's good to be blessed with financial things, too. God mm-hmm. seems to bless people financially. And so we don't want to get in the place where that's a curse.
No.
Because it's not a curse to have God bless. And sometimes we know poor people can be very sinful.
Mm-hmm.
And, mm-hmm. that have no desire for God in their heart.
Exactly. And so I appreciate you bringing up that tension. Absolutely, I'm not saying either way that being poor is better or being rich is better. I'm saying both are actually a blessing, and both have areas of sin that we can pursue and lead us astray from God. And God sets us in both circumstances for our good. And ultimately, that's where that's the passage I just said. Indeed, I have a beautiful inheritance, regardless of my circumstance. That the inheritance that I have, what we have in Christ, is beyond all the riches of the world. There's nothing that we lack. Real quick. Sorry.
I was just going to say, not to undermine mm-hmm. third world countries. I'm from a third world mm-hmm. country, so mm-hmm. I understand the poorness mm-hmm. and the wanting to helpful to know that, even though you can focus in a broad perspective like that.
Right.
It's really important to focus on the day-to-day perspective, too, for the saints, because even though you're not starving, you're not hungry, not, you know, you don't live out in the dirt or whatever, you still struggle with some sin that...
Absolutely.
Daily.
And yeah.
This is where God has you, like what you guys were saying.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where you're going to be. And this is how you're going to have to bless people.
Yeah.
And not bless their world country and that, spread the gospel.
Yeah.
People are called for different things.
Yeah. Well, and that was exactly the point that I was trying to say about the Ecuador thing, is that often people go to other countries and they think how blessed I am to live here. And I walked away from that one very distinctly and clearly saying that no, there's actually great challenges where I live, because this strips away a lot of the frivolous stuff that I pursue. Did I see another hand somewhere? No? Okay, principle, desiring more money for the sole sake of spending creates a love of money, which in turn becomes idol worship. Isaiah 55:2. Someone get that for us? I wasn't trying to track you down. Okay, go ahead.
Okay.
Sword drill. Yep.
Why do you spend money for what is not bread, and your wages for what is not satisfied? Listen carefully to me, and eat what is good, and delight yourself in abundance.
And so, the principle there: material things are temporary and do not bring satisfaction to the soul. And so the question being asked is, why do you spend money on what is not bread? And so how does that principle apply in our lives? What is the importance of that principle that we're looking at?
Be satisfied with the things that God supplies you that you need it.
Mm.
And beyond that, enjoy, if he should choose to give you beyond that, enjoy that,
right?
But know that those are gifts, like you were saying.
Right.
Pleasure is a gift from the Lord.
Right.
I like the way you put that.
Right.
Because you know, a lot of us pursued, and certainly in our unbelieving life, that's what we were pursuing.
Yeah.
Was pleasure.
It was the God, the thing that we, yeah. Yep, the idol. So Krispy Kreme donuts are okay. All right, Matthew 6:19-21. This gets to the heart of the whole issue. Matthew 6:19-21.
Do not store up for yourself treasures on earth, where moth and rust destroy, and where thieves break in and steal. But store up for yourself treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust destroys, and where thieves do not break in or steal. No, not yet. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also.
Thank you. And so that's the exact principle that we've been talking about the whole time. Right? What is it that our heart pursues? What is it that it's focused on? And Jesus is not, like Mark actually said earlier, Jesus is not saying that any riches or any of the blessings that God brings, that those things are evil in of themselves. But in this passage, the disciples must not lay up treasures for themselves. That's the important part right there. It's that, who is it that you're seeking to please? If it's you're pleasing yourself, that's what we don't want to do. Yes.
William's taken a finance class, and he's going to read Randy Alcorn's principle, which is really good. I've been reading it before. And he mentioned Rockefeller, too. And when he died, somebody asked how much money did he leave, and the guy said all of it. You
know, right. That's right. Yeah.
And he also talked about it's not, if you're thinking about investments and stocks and bonds and stuff like that, you're investing. This is the same with heaven. You're investing what, you know, and when you get to heaven, that's where your treasure is. That's where you're, so the one, if you're, not that you shouldn't invest here either to provide for long-term care, but you're going to leave it. You know, why not invest in your treasure in heaven?
Yeah.
Because when you get there, then you'll be rewarded with your investment there. Because I never thought of it like that. I always thought, just whatever's going to come to me, I'll get it when mm-hmm. I'm in heaven, you know, but
right.
actually investing. Actually,
yeah, that's a great point. And what's the goal for investment in a worldly sense? Wall Street, why are they investing? What are they trying to do? They're getting a return. And what kind of return do they want?
Bigger than their investment.
Bigger than their investment, right? They want a good return on the investment that they make. And so what happens all the time is, you know, they hear this thing, insider trading, all this other kind of stuff, because they want the sure thing. There's one sure thing. And there's 100% return on it, right? There's no greater investment that we can make. There is no place that's more guaranteed where we invest in, of what we're going to receive. There is no better investment we can make. Yes, sir?
Far better than 100% return, because 100% return would be just getting back what you put in.
Okay. I agree. Is it 1,000 or is it more than 1,000? Okay. Okay. All right. That works. I like it. That's good. Yeah. Math is tricky. We're not doing math, okay? Stop. All right, I'm going with you guys. I agree with you. Consider how much time you spend thinking about earthly things. So the heart that he talks about, that Jesus speaks of here, think about how much time you spend pursuing earthly things versus heavenly things. And earthly things, sometimes they are for the purpose of heaven. They are for the kingdom, right? So when we provide food and water to people that are struggling after a storm of some kind or difficulty, those are earthly things, but we should be doing it, ministering them as Christ would minister to them, right? And so we can spend on earthly things, but the purpose of it is the kingdom. And your heart, my heart, is what drives what we do every single day. And that's exactly what Jesus is talking about in this passage. When you think about, if you want to know what the idols are in your life, think about when you first wake up in the morning. What are those first thoughts that are going through your mind? Because you're going to find idols there. When you go into bed at night, what are those thoughts that are going through your mind? All day long, you go back to whatever that might be. And hopefully, it's something that's honoring God, and it's not an idol, right? Anything that's not God is an idol to us. And so we can have those thoughts that we pursue and we focus on. And so that's where we have to be careful, the heart that drives us. And what we pursue, we worship, whatever that may be. Jesus' point is that things that are most highly treasured occupy the heart, the center of the personality that embraces mind, emotions, and will. Thus, the most cherished treasure subtly, but infallibly controls one's whole direction and values. Luke 6:38. Who would read that for us? Who has it? Okay, thank you.
6:38.
Yes.
Give, and it will be given to you. They will pour into your lap a good measure, pressed down, shaken together, and running over. For by your standard of measure, it will be measured to you in return.
And so that's actually a thing that we talked about before. God does bless us. Those who are generous, Jesus goes on to say, will be abundantly repaid for their kindness.
That does sound like 100% return, because in the measure that you
is given, thank you. That's good. I was partially right. Uh-oh.
Before it says, do not judge and you will not be judged. Mm. And I think that gives the context. Mm-hmm. I think that's also a warning that we can look at somebody that has a lot and be like, man, mm-hmm. have no idea what they're giving. Because if they're also following the verse that you don't let your hands know. And
right.
Then they could be giving away half their income.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's funny because the way that God trusts us with circumstances, there's times where there's a phrase that they, God will never give you more than you can handle, is a phrase that they use. And it's funny, he gives you more than you can handle all the time, right? Because if you think you can handle it, you're thinking wrongly. But But you can be fearful. I can be fearful in the midst of that. I want to say, God, I can only handle this, right? Don't give me that. Because the focus becomes I want to do it in my own strength. And that's the danger. That's the very danger. 2 Corinthians 9, 7. Thank you.
Each one must do just as he has purposed in his heart, not grudgingly or under compulsion, for God loves a cheerful giver.
And so as he has considered in his heart, see, this, that's one of the main things that I hope you walk away with today is how often we're told to think on these things, to consider these things, that we're not frivolous. Someone that has more resources might be able to say, I don't have any worries, so I can give lots of things away without worry. Like you were just talking about, they give away half their fortune, you know, like Bill Gates and Warren Buffett, you know, they give away whatever. I don't know how much, 100 billion, who knows. But they give away a lot of money. And I think they're probably thoughtful. They're not seeking to honor God in it, but they're thoughtful in that. And we have to be thoughtful regardless of what it is that we give. And there's an important piece to it. What you decide, you must do. Do it. And then the principle is giving is a spending decision. Giving should be the result of inward resolve, not from impulsive or casual decisions. All right, I got to keep going. 1 Timothy 6, 17 and 19. Who would read that? Thank you, sir.
Instruct those who are rich in this present world not to be conceited or to fix their hope on uncertain riches, but on God, who richly supplies us with all things to enjoy. Instruct them to do good, to be rich in good works, to be generous, and ready to share, storing up for themselves a treasure of a good foundation for the future, so that they may take hold of that which is life indeed.
Thank you. So the principle is, excuse me, Christians are not to be high-minded and proud in their financial position, which we talked about before, because riches are fleeting. And so what's a biblical example you guys can think of? Riches disappeared in a heartbeat.
Job.
Yep. What's that?
I said, or when the, you know, when everything,
stock market crash.
Mm-hmm. It's funny when they talk about that because I don't, like, nothing's really, really changed in many senses. I want to be careful because economically there's a lot of things related to that. But they say that our nation lost $1.2 trillion in a stock market crash or whatever. And you go, doesn't feel like it, but maybe. So expending resources. God is a provider of all wealth. Every spending decision is a spiritual one. Giving should be the first priority when it comes to a spending plan. Helping the needy and saving for the future needs to be second. Spending all one's wealth in the present most often creates poverty in the future. All right. So we're going to jump to this. I'm going to just show you this real quick. One of the first things... when we're considering budgets, oops, let me go here. Let me see if I can do this. One of the first things when considering budgets, when we talk about investing in the first thing, who did I tell you the best financial advisor was?
You.
Why are you the best? You know what you want to do, right? For a seeking to please God and whatever it might be, that you're going to know that better than anyone else that can advise you. And really, at the time, what I told you is keep it simple. If you don't understand it, don't invest in it. And so I'd be telling you the same thing here. The very first thing that you have to do when you start looking at a budget is what?
Understand.
Huh?
Understand.
Okay, explain that.
If you're looking at a budget... You know, you're looking at a budgeting system, a method for managing where you're going to put your finances. Know what all the structures you're doing mean. because it doesn't make sense to use your budget as a tool but have no idea how it works.
Okay.
You have to understand how it works so you can use it and actually know what you're using it to do.
Great. And I would say even before that, you have to look at it. You have to see what's going on. And I would say, I know a lot of you understand this better than I do. So I'm 100% fine with that. Some people are at a place in their budget where the first thing you have to do is look at it and see what's going on. I know that I suffered with that for a long time. As long as when I went to spend money, as long as there was something in the bank, I was okay, right? And so you can be at that place where you need to be looking at your budget. That's the first thing you have to do. You have to observe what's going on. And so one of the key principles, I think I've said this before, when we had the recession in 2008 and they came in and they're telling us all these wonderful people they're bringing in, all these geniuses that are going to help fix our economy. At the time, I thought that a single parent would be better for our economy than anything else, because what the government seems to never understand is what's the number one principle when it comes to budgets. Spend less than you make. It's really simple. It's not complicated. You don't need 50 degrees. Spend less than you make, right? I get that there are more complex economic approaches to this, but spend less than you make. That's, for me, you want to just keep it simple. And so this here, just start out saying, how much do I bring in and how much are we spending? This is just a one that you can download. Okay, my mouse has disappeared. There it is. And you can just go through and see what you're bringing in and what you're spending, right? It's really simple. And this, everyone has access to that has Excel, or if you use OpenOffice, they have a similar kind of thing. So you can use something just like this that's really simple to help you see your budget. Start from the simple. All right, get rid of that. And then you can move on to more complex ones. Like this, but really when, like Josh was saying, it's the same thing. You need to understand it. You need to spend a little time figuring out, each of these categories, but it's still the same exact thing. That's your checkbook register. This is a savings worksheet. Those are different things. This is from Dave Ramsey, and he lays out a lot of different things here on your spending. And so, but this, again, this is not that, this looks really complex and it can do all sorts of neat things, but you're putting in what you're spending and what you're making, and you're doing it in lots of categories. And you can go get that spreadsheet and it's gonna calculate it for you. It's gonna lay it out in pretty graphs and everything else for you to see. But part of what I'm trying to communicate is don't go get the sheet if you haven't even started looking at your budget yet, because this is going to kill you. You're going to spend all your time and energy trying to figure this thing out. Figure out what you make each month and what you spend each month, and start from there and build on it. Build on success. Don't have this grand plan and fall short, because then you're never going to get the budget done. You got to start and get your budget done. Yes, please.
Find the beginning of the month or whatever your payday is, and you save every single receipt. And if you don't get a receipt, write it down, and then sit down at the table and put it in three columns. And it's just the simplest things. All housing, everything that you would do for your gas, your electric, whatever. And then all your food, whether it's in or out or groceries or whatever, and then anything else. And then you can categorize all those down even more narrow.
Yeah.
But just starting with something, and for some that what is, I remember doing a class once before, and they've been, okay, what do you mean by budget? What does that mean? That means write it all down.
That's it.
Write it all down.
Simple.
Okay. And see which column is the biggest and which column you can get rid of. Look, I don't ever have to spend this anymore. This is ridiculous.
Right. Right. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. And there are definitely lots of ways that all of you have that we could share that really help in that budgeting process. Measure, decide, then do it. And just get more detailed over time. When you start looking at things, It's the same as when you buy a new car, new to you car, right? All of a sudden, those cars are all over the place on the road and you never saw them before. How'd that happen? Right? It's because you know what your car is, so now you notice it everywhere. Budget does the exact same thing. When you start looking at it, you start noticing where your money's going, what you're spending money on. And really, nowadays, it's a lot easier in some senses because of a lot of it's electronic, if you do that. And then lastly, I didn't want to pull it up because I knew we wouldn't have time, but there are online budgeting systems too that are pretty helpful. I'm not going to tell you all of them. I'll tell you one that I use that I like. It's called Mint, and it's from Intuit, and it's really pretty good. It ties a lot of different things together. I don't use it to pay any bills, but I use it to monitor things. It does a really good job of that. Secondly, I would tell you that if you're not aware, that you can set alerts on a lot of your different accounts, bank accounts, credit card accounts, so that when it spends more than X, it'll send you a text and let you know. And that's a good idea for you to do, right? Just for two reasons. One, if all of a sudden you're buying new pocketbooks in Oklahoma and you're here, you know something's wrong, right? So that's one, in case something has happened to your account. Number two, it's a good reminder that even when you're tired and it's late at night and it's prime day and you're there clicking away and all of a sudden you're getting all these things saying, oh, it's a reminder that you're spending a lot now, right? It just reminds you, you just spent this money. And so there are a lot of things out there like that. And electronically, they can help you. I would just tell you, on the security side, Intuit is a large company. I'll tell you, every single company gets hacked, has been hacked, will be hacked. So if your concern is that somebody's going to get hacked, your information's out there. Even if you send by telegraph your bills every week, right? Your information is stored electronically. So I'm not saying so just do anything you want. Be wise in what you're doing. Okay, just a little bit on the security side. Be wise in what you're doing. Now, I would tell you, on the other side, you don't have to worry as much when it comes to credit cards, banks, and stuff like that. I'm sure many of you have received something from the bank saying, hey, we had to cancel your credit card, we're sending you a new one. That's because they got hacked. That's why they're doing it. Now, all that information, actually, they can just turn it off and send you a new one. Information they can't do that with is your health information. I won't go too far down that path because that's what I do, but you can't change that. And that's what a lot of criminals want, is to get your health information, because it has a lot of information that they can always use. It's never going to change for you. But your credit card, your bank account, stuff like that, ultimately are protected in one sense. And then just a quick note on that. Emails, don't click on emails that you weren't expecting to receive. It's really not that complex. And people are doing it all the time. They get something, they click on it, and all of a sudden they get all sorts of badness happening in their life. Just don't click on the things that you aren't expecting to get.
Jay, are texts on the phone as dangerous as emails?
Texts on the phone are...
Texts with an attachment.
Like what kind of... An attachment, you said?
Yeah, or like a multimedia message.
I would tell you this, is that... So if it's related to account, if you have all your accounts stored on your phone, then yes, you have to be careful. Because you got to be careful with what that does. If I'm not sure of something and I don't want to click it, I'm usually going to go to my phone. A lot of times, because the different malware that they send is going to be based on a particular operating system, usually Windows, and your phone's not going to respond to it the way that the hackers wanted it to respond. Now, having said that, obviously, Android and a lot of other operating systems hackers are going after. They definitely are. So yes, it can be just as dangerous. And it's really a simple process. If you don't know who it's from or you weren't, that's the problem. A lot of times you get it from somebody that you know. You weren't expecting it, then just don't click on it. And if it's important, they'll send it to you again. Or call them and say, hey, just don't click on it. And if it's important, they'll send it to you again. Or call them and say, hey, just don't click on it. And if it's important, they'll send it to you again. Or call them and say, hey, just don't click on it. And if it's important, they'll send it to you again. Or call them and say, hey, just don't click on it. And if it's important, they'll send it to you again. Or call them and say, hey, just don't click on it. And if it's important, they'll send it to you again. Or call them and say, hey, just don't click on it.